I've been working on this long poem, and I have yet to read it, the parts that feel mostly finished anyway. I've yet to read it from beginning to wherever I'm at right now. So I thought that I would try it here. There's not really a whole lot that you need to know, except for the fact that it's a love poem, and the main characters are Willie and Yolanda. And Willie's just trying to get Yolanda to fall in love with him. That's pretty much what it's all about. It takes place in the name of the town is Pelea, and it's bordered by a river called the Mestizo River, which joins a freshwater lake and the sea. So it's the mestizaje of water. It's this mixture of it's a brackish river. On the other side is a place called Paz. The whole area used to be called Paz until this river charged through. There's a whole mythology that goes along with this thing, but I won't go into it. In any case, and there's a bridge that connects Paz and Pelea, but they live in Pelea. The lovers of Paz y Pelea Bridge. It's like story time, so it's just a story. Beloved brother Willie every day bragged to Yolanda he could cross 9 times over Paz y Pelea Bridge, carrying her on his back, singing El coro te que bien te ves, and not once let her feet touch the ground. And would she then let him kiss her for 11 sunsets straight? Thing is, beloved brother Will was not known to stack a story thick, i.e., talk shit and not follow through. Like the time Bag and him ran on the same squad, 4-on-4, full court, rocking Tims and Goose Down, skidding once in a while on a patch of ice. And Willie's man kept scoring, and Bag called him a punk. And Willie said he would stick him with his 7-inch steel if Bag didn't shut up. But Bag was packed with a lot of hot air. And 3 nights later, some demon came to his bed and cut butterflies from his cheeks. And he lived long enough to keep the secret of what quick blade carved those things from his face into flight. We all knew. So nobody fucked with Will when he started reading his bad poems out loud in the moonlight, high as a motherfucker. It wasn't long after Willie would get all twisted when Ash and Ilang Ilang drifted up the whole block to the CeeLo game at the courts. Everyone knew something was wrong that spring because he hit trip sixes and straight up left the G he put down and wandered toward Yolanda's yard of full-blown blossoms to wait for her outside. No one had seen Willie so quiet since his papa tied an extension cord around his ankles and dropped him down the Main Street manhole to dig out the money pouch the old man dropped into the grate the drunken night before in the middle of a storm. His papa wouldn't let him up unless he came back with the pouch, and he did climb back up with the pouch 47 cents short. So his papa made Willie kneel in a corner on tamarind seeds as he whipped the back of his neck with a wooden cross 46 times. Willie didn't talk for the whole summer or fall, and half the winter he lifted weights and drank all his Tito's rum, quiet like that, until the Tuesday around midnight he was looking to bury a fat pillow of reefer, the best ever in the history of Paz y Pelea, ever since the surfers came to build the bridge from Rogue to Mother, when they had bales of the luminescent green. But Father Jimmy wasn't having nothing that made people so happy and giggly and likely to talk about oneness with the universe. So after the bridge got built and the surfers went back west, he told everyone they would go to hell if they kept smoking the good shit. Of course, everyone was God-fearing, mostly, but just not Father Jimmy-fearing. So the people who smoked weed just kept doing it. Willie had the good shit like that, and decided to bury it in the grassy lot between the church and Father Jimmy's house. But when he started scooping out the ground, he felt a flat knock under the dirt. He pulled out a beat-up book and sat there a while, reading in the language of his dead mother something about bad teeth and falling in love and a boy who turned into wind and a girl into a kite. That's when Willie stopped being so quiet and started singing poems in the moonlight, high as a motherfucker. People say Yolanda had visions. The night, for example, everything got funky for 16 bars. The breakdown, you could say. That was the first time she heard her Lola's eyes open. Even though, story goes, Lola Pansing fell asleep on a cot on a beach because a light-skinned man promised to sail back with a Santa Maria of pure silver. And Lola Pansing waited and waited, but got washed out into Motherland Bay on that cot. sleeping and sleeping, washed out into the big old waters. And the fish saints to this day watch over her and let her sleep on the sea. They thrash the boats of men who hoard silver in their hulls, and the scuttling sometimes wakes Lola Ponsing, and the fish saints' giant tails send gales and rain over those oceans and to the islands, and those grumpy fish saints have to tend the old woman back to sleep. Yolanda can hear her Lola on the verge of waking. Long before the winds lift whole houses out of their foundations. Some people thought it was bullshit until Moko set fire to Yolanda's guitar shop and people could hear her singing from the second floor the song of waves and deep sleep, a song that stings the ocean back with a salt of her own. You could hear her singing over the fires, the strain of bronze and mahogany ripping walls out like fish guts. People say she got a little cooked in that fire. And that's why she's so dark and sexy, and she smells like ilang ilang and ash. No one knows for sure how she survived. And a week after he first got shot down, there was Quiet Willie in front of Yolanda's house, smoking cigarettes, kicking the curb, the first squeak of the screen door. Willie shook up and shouted, "Hey, Yolanda, come out with me tonight and pick a star for me to tag on its burning face, your name and mine." And Yolanda said, "Little Will, you don't know nothing but thuggin' and dice. You don't know nothing about names and stars. Besides, who needs stars when I shine?" And Brother Willie stomped back into the night to drink rum with the tios and smoke trees alone between the church and Father Jimmy's and read from the book about teeth and the man who survived a crossbow through the skull. And every story was about Yolanda. Yolanda Moon and Yolanda Street, Rapid Fire Yolanda and Yolanda Slow Ice. So, Big Brother Will, the next morning, snapped a dozen reeds and an armful of cattails from the Mestizo River banks. There is, the Dios used to say to him, a science to the snare. You can't want the bird too bad. And you have to wait for the game with your belly pressed to the ground, lying face down, they said. And it takes 1 hour to forget the skin, half the morning to forget the smallest muscle of the foot, 2 mornings more to forget the tongue, and 1 summer week to learn to ruin the heart's puny rush in the blood. And this is how Willie forgot himself into the earth beneath him, not a flinch or breath or pulse. This is how he mastered his body into stone and waited for the bird to step across the twig trigger and into the flat noose, struck on the wing by the reed bundle snapped out of its strained arc. You need a long stillness, the Titos would say, before a quick recall of the blood and its muddy hunger and the bird stunned to a black blur, snatched. And that is how, as it was taught from man to boy and carried by fist into manhood's darkest precincts, as it was taught to Willie, he cut the bird's tongue so it could learn to repeat everything it would hear. And this is how Willie of the Trip Sixes, Willie of the Bad Pickup Line, Willie of the Quick Steel Infused Left Hand had caught his mimic, pinched open its beak, and severed the small gray shaft from the tiny mouth. And a week and some days more, sleepless Willie sauntered to Yolanda's full-blossomed yard, placed the cage on the fence post, and waited, not long at all, for Yolanda of the Nameless Star to come out from behind the door she peeked from, for she walked straight up to the smiling Willie of the Crooked Teeth and kicked him in the knee.
Water break.
The bird trick doesn't work. And Yolanda carried that cage by foot all the way to the third hill from Paz to free this bird among all the other birds with collars of rust around their black necks, whose tongues had been severed for epics by tios in Pelea before they had forgotten what it was like to live in Paz. The birds that finally escaped and convened in these trees to teach each other an impeccable mimicry of this silly village. This is how they knew the language of men, but also how they knew their violins and lies and laughter, and their foolish engines puttering down, the raucous generations of Pelea clamoring in the trees. And Yolanda paused long enough to hear the thin ching of a 7-inch steel on skin and a cocoon's first break. She paused long enough to listen to the bird of her own voice singing salt and sting long before Moko, who had ears of a mule, dragged her into an alley. And she heard from the bird of Moko's voice, which was the bird of her voice too, saying in the trees, "I want to smell your hair." And she heard the birds sing again, the oncoming footsteps outside the alley, and her head's thud against the wall after the man with the ears of a mule shoved her down and ran off. But the birds did not, could not, speak the sound of the first flint spark behind the eyes. And what sound could they make for the 12-year-old girl plucking the longest locks from her brush the first morning after she was shoved into an alley by a man with the ears and breath of a mule? And how he whispered to her with his mule breath, "I want to smell your hair." There was no sound from the birds for the way every Sunday for a year she twisted those strands she collected from her brush, twisted them in the direction of clocks into a single strand. And it took 9 years of plucking from her brush and twisting the fine threads in the direction of clocks to make four separate strands, each the full length of a man from his toe to the tip of his ears, even if such ears were those of a mule. 9 years of twisting, every Sunday, her stray hair in the same direction the earth turns around the sun. But it took only one afternoon to braid those four strands, one for each dimension of loneliness perfected in the town of Balea, and weave them into a rope. And if each strand was twisted in the same direction as the earth turns around the sun, the same direction of clocks, then these four strands were to be braided in the opposite direction, braided to one another against time. That was how one fashioned the strongest rope. This one, thick as her thumb and forefinger, this one smelled of ilang ilang and a touch of ash. The birds, they had no song for any of this, though they had a song for the bright bath of sunlight Yolanda stepped into, clutching her crafted rope the length of a man, a song too for the effortless way she grabbed Moko by the ears like a jack or hare, and the way she strangled his thick mule neck till he turned the color of a rotting strawberry. And how the other men in that summer sun bath playing dominoes did not stop her, because Moko could not hold the secrets of his lust and bragged to everyone how he once tasted the hair of the girl who was part burn and part blossom. And because Moko, even without his ears, was twice the height of the shortest men in Pelea, he fell over with a great thud trying to remember air. A man who has forgotten the ocean must dream of it, must feel the coral cutting his ankles to bone, the flayed anatomy of light filtering down the sky's gray abrasions that changes everything it touches to a fog he can't take into his lungs. He must taste brine and gasp and feel the pure silver of his breastbone on the verge of breaking, must gasp and hack and know the baddest breakdown of riptides. He must learn to breathe underwater.